third down and 20.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Third and 20 Dynasty Podcast. I'm JT, joined by Frank and Lunas today. We are on season 4, episode 8, and where that puts us in the NFL season is the trade deadline. Except no big trades really happened today. Derrick Henry was one of the ones rumored to potentially be going somewhere. That didn't happen. So we'll talk about the smaller trades in a little bit, but we're going to lead off with our guy, Big Kirko, unfortunately tearing his Achilles in Sunday's game, out for the season. The Vikings did then trade for Josh Dobbs, which we'll talk about in a minute. But guys, Kirk Cousins going down, that just sucks. Because he was looking, I don't know, I felt like we were going to get the best Kirk Cousins season that we've seen.
He was on pace for it.
Yeah, and now we have an injured Kirk Cousins, which just sucks. It was fun. Mm-hmm.
I think what I was just going to say quick, the also annoying part isn't really just the people who have Kirk Cousins, but those who have Jordan Addison or Justin Jefferson. Like, Kirk is one of, like, in terms of just, like, getting, like, his receivers to have good fantasy production, he's, like, one of the best QBs in the NFL at it. And just, like, spreading the ball around with Addison, Jettas when he's back, and Hockenson. So for me, I viewed that part as really annoying, especially I have Addison in a couple weeks. So where it's like, I mean, we'll speak more about Dobbs later, but it's going to be a drop off for Jefferson. Might just get a ton of targets, so he'll probably be okay. But Addison, I think, takes a hit for the rest of the season.
I think Jefferson, when he comes back, does take a hit because I think that now how much of a hit is kind of yet to be determined. But dude, there's just no way that they come in with a backup and produce at that, like, because Justin Jefferson was on like 2,000 yard season kind of pace when healthy, yeah. Right, like, dude, there's just no way a backup comes in and produces like that. Like, maybe he can still be that 1,300 yard kind of pace, right, and or like a 1,200 yard pace kind of guy. I don't know what that comes out to in yards per game. But, like, kind of with those seasons that D-Hop would have with just terrible QBs in Houston. But, yeah, like, for my J-Jeff teams, that I'm pissed because I was hoping to have him come back and be like, all right, we're fine, we're ready for the championship run, but... And yeah, I'm not going to sell him. I'm not going to, like, convert J-Jeff into any other receiver as well. It's just not worth
it. Yeah. No, I do agree with you in terms of just like the pace he was on earlier this season. Yeah, it's not going to be that. I more so meant it in the fact of like Kirk was able to support a couple of different receivers. I don't see Dobbs coming in and being able to like keep more than one receiver really fantasy relevant. That's kind of what I was alluding to more with Addison.
I was pulling up the stats for Arizona, and keep in mind, I think this Vikings offensive game plan is significantly better than Arizona's, and the personnel surrounding the Vikings other than the running back position, although Arizona was injured there. With that being said, with Josh Dobbs, I guess we could get into that too. Josh Dobbs is traded to the Vikings now and will be the starting quarterback for the Vikings after this week, where after I think Jaren Hall, I think is his name, who looked flat out bad.
Jaren Hall's gonna ball next game.
No, he looked bad. Anyway, though, with Josh Dobbs on the Cardinals this year, Hollywood Brown had almost 70 targets for the team, and then the next highest receiver was Michael Wilson with 33, so less than half of that. I wouldn't be surprised if you get a similar spread of the wealth with the Vikings, with Justin Jefferson just doubling up whoever's next, whether that be Hockenson or Addison or Osborne, whatever that next guy is. I think you're going to see the same thing, and it's... I think Jefferson takes a hit in terms of he's not going to be the wide receiver one overall this year, probably. But, I mean, on a points per game wise.
Per game basis, yeah.
Because he's already been hurt. But I think he'll still be fine.
Like, yeah, he'll still be good, just not league-winning, ridiculous numbers in my kind of good.
Yeah. And from, like, a redraft perspective, this just kind of sucks.
So what's interesting, though, about the Vikings in terms of Josh Dobbs is that the Vikings running attack is so trash that there's just I really don't see a world. It would take some monumental changes for them to all of a sudden come out here and start just beating up on teams on the ground. I do not think that's going to be the case.
No.
So are the Vikings going to come out here and at least have some sort of success throwing the ball? Maybe having like a Colts kind of offense where some games they're going to be trash, other games they'll be able to move the ball, but they might turn it over.
Or the Colts have been able to run the ball all year, though.
Yeah, that's true, right? And not only that, they've been like really good at it.
Yeah.
And that brings me to the second thing. It's like, is it just going to look like the Cardinals last week, a team that literally could not complete passes consistently? And I mean, their running game, it wasn't like the worst I've ever seen, but like, you ran the ball, a little over 20 times, and you maybe got like 100 yards, maybe just over. DeMercado, their main guy, 20 rushes for 85. So is that what we're going to see? Because that's terrible, and that's not helping anyone.
The defenses that they're playing too for the rest of the season are not really cupcakes, other than I guess Chicago, who did just trade for Montez Sweat. I think it's going to be very tough sledding for the Vikings offense as a whole.
I will say though, this is big for Josh Dobbs for the rest of the season, yeah, fantasy wise though, because the one thing about Josh Dobbs is that he's that Ryan Tannehill kind of quarterback where he has that sneaky, consistent rushing production that really shows up in the red zone. So he's the type of player that just has a higher floor than you think.
I just don't really understand the whole Josh Dobbs from the NFL team's perspective. Like, is it just because he's simply super cheap? Is that why people are going out and grabbing Josh Dobbs?
I mean, they got him for like nothing. They traded, what was it, a seventh for... Or no, it was a sixth for like Josh Dobbs.
Him in the seventh.
So the first thing that is important about Josh Dobbs that you're not taking into account is that this dude is both really fucking smart and has been in a handful of systems now. So this dude, in terms of a QB who's going to be able to come in, learn your offense enough to actually run it without being like... Because we saw Baker do that with the Rams, but Baker is a number one overall pick kind of talent. So like, he can kind of get in there and you can kind of do things. Like, you're not going to do that with Joe Schmo a lot of the time. You have to get really lucky. Whereas I think Josh Dobbs at least gives you that, okay, if we have no one else, right? If Jaren Hall looks like he did when he played last week. Yeah, Josh Dobbs can at least go out there and maybe win you a game.
Okay. This kind of feels like an easy time. I don't really understand. This felt like an easy time for the Vikings to just pack it in and just, sell off whatever aging assets they have. Hey, we have Justin Jefferson, Kirk's entering, or this is Kirk is potentially walking after this year. Let's just try and rebuild.
Go ahead, JT. Sorry.
I mean, I guess maybe it's a morale thing, and maybe it's like, hey, like we're still trying to compete, guys. Like, we'll keep the crew together. Maybe that's the kind of play that they're going for. But I just think this was an easy excuse for the team to actually accumulate some big assets and push forward into the future and look at the future and not just, these next 8 or 9 weeks.
I wouldn't be surprised if they maybe offered players around, but it's really tough because I think the coaching staff still thinks that they have a chance to turn around and make a playoffs. That division isn't really amazing, even though the Lions are looking really good. Like, but I do tend to agree with you and that and that's part of the reason why if I'm them, I probably wouldn't have gotten Dobbs. I probably would have just started trying out random fucking QBs and seeing if we can hit on some rando dude that could either be a really good backup for us, or maybe we have a QB that goes out there and plays well, and now we have trade value. Because I kind of agree. What is Josh Dobbs doing for your team?
I think they're probably still trying to make a push because now they're, 4-4? And I think they have a kind of easy game this week. I might be wrong. Atlanta.
They're at Atlanta.
But yeah. Like, this is the same thing I was saying about the Jets at the second half of last season. What does going in there and playing Mike White because he gives you a better chance to win actually do? It does nothing. If the Vikings make the playoffs, they do not win the Super Bowl. There is no Nick Foles scenario. This team is not winning, that good.
They're not winning a game.
So what's the point? Cool, maybe you make the playoffs. Hurrah! Like, I that's what... Like, and I guess as an NFL team, like, you know, just throwing in the towel, maybe like the fans, you just don't want to get them on your back or whatever, but...
I think it's more so the players on the team.
But if the goal is to win a Super Bowl, in my opinion, doing this and trying to make the playoffs this year, that does not help you win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, no, that's what I've been trying to get at. Yeah, this is just a... Whatever.
I wonder what happens with Kirk in free agency now. Coming off an Achilles tear, like how many years?
There are teams I don't think desperate for Kirk Cousins.
I mean, but, I'm surprised that we are the Vikings not trying to re-sign Kirk?
I don't think they aren't.
I think they should.
I mean, the window might be gone.
I think with the Achilles, like you could probably sign him, but I wonder if it's just going to be kind of like a 2 or 3 year deal rather than like a 4 year something crazy number. I'm interested to see how his free agency plays out.
I think he's going to get a long contract somewhere.
Yeah, 100%. Because with the way he was playing, he's the type of dude that you throw in, you say fuck the next couple of years when he's gone. Like we are trying to win it now. And you do one of those types of contracts. You backload the shit out of it and keep your cap space to go get more players.
Okay, so not to be outdone, though. The Lions saw the big Josh Dobbs trade, and they're like, well, we have to counter that somehow. So the Lions went out, and they traded for Donovan Peoples-Jones from the Cleveland Browns, who wasn't really being utilized this year. Be that Elijah Moore kind of breaking out, just the lack of quarterback play coming on from Cleveland as well. We just haven't really seen Donovan Peoples-Jones, so he gets moved to the Detroit Lions. Kind of an interesting move because Dan Campbell was talking about wanting to improve this team. I guess.
This is such a Lions trade because I think like Donovan Peoples-Jones, big, like good type run blocker player. So exactly what the Lions are looking for.
He's a Michigan guy too.
The one thing that I think everyone's thinking about this trade. Does this impact Jameson Williams at all? Is this them saying, you have not been consistent enough, we need someone else to play some of the snaps that you're playing?
I think you could spin it two ways. I think if you want to do the anti-Jameson Williams way, that's it, exactly there. Like, we need someone to do what you've been doing. But if you want to put it pro-Jameson Williams, you say, hey, we still value that person that can go take the top off the defense, you know, give you that vertical threat. But we like what we have in Jameson Williams here when we can get the ball in his hands. Maybe we'll just have Donovan Peoples-Jones being that guy that takes the top off the defense, but we're going to scheme more stuff for Jameson Williams coming out of the slot, doing Amon-Ra stuff.
Yeah. Out that way. My stance is someone who's pro JMO side. I mean, one, I think, like, it's still, he has 9 games in his NFL career now, with half of those coming at the end of last year when he just came off the ACL and he wasn't able to practice during his suspension. So I could say all that. I mean, the main thing, though, is if you have JMO, if you're worried about Donovan's Peoples-Jones, then you think he's not going to be good. Do you, like, yeah. Like, if Jameson Williams can't beat out Donovan's Peoples-Jones, it's more so a concern about him.
The Lions telling you that?
I don't think so. I just think the receivers outside of Amon-Ra and Jameson are like, Reynolds has been okay. Besides that, like Marvin Harrison, I mean, I said Marvin. Marvin Jones, they just had to cut, who they had originally as like their wide receiver before, so that might be his replacement as well. So yeah, that's kind of how I view it.
What do you think?
Dude, I think it's tough because I was saying a couple weeks ago, I've been declining but still have value type receivers, I said that I was putting Jameson Williams towards the top. And it's annoying because, like, this is a Lions team that's trying to win, so they're not going to put up with, like, at least in my opinion, some Jerry Jeudy kind of bullshit. I feel like they're, especially with how Dan Campbell seems to be running that organization, he would much rather play a Donovan Peoples-Jones than deal with bullshit. So that's fair. Kind of why I'm a little bit scared. If I had Jameson Williams, as well as, you know, just over the past couple of weeks, he really hasn't shown anything since that first game.
Seeing him get hit in the helmet a few times, while funny, does have to suck. Because those are, like, that is the difference between him being, like, everyone's still going crazy over him and being worth, like, first round plus kind of stuff to now, I don't even know what he's worth on the open market, because it kind of feels like it's been in a free fall.
I don't know. He's putting up goose eggs in weeks. Listen, Lunas, I don't know if you're panicking at all, but I would definitely be quaking in my boots over there about what the fuck is going on.
I'm not in panic mode yet. I'm happy that he's getting more snaps on a week-to-week basis. And, like, again, I think that him not practicing with the team during suspension is, like, a big hit. Because that was like 7 weeks. So I think you definitely want to see kind of more consistent production the second half of the season, but he's been starting to get more looks, more targets. Then the Ravens game, he had a few that, like, he was getting like a decent, like an increased number of looks. So I would wait and see. Yesterday, I think he mostly just had two plays. He had one like 20 something yard catch over the middle. And then he had the other where it was like the sweep and Crosby just lit him up in the backfield. So yeah, I don't know. I like it. Again, if you're worried about Donovan's Peoples-Jones, then I think it's a bigger concern, more so about just Jameson himself than the situation that he's in.
Well, yeah, I think it's the situation he's in because of Jameson himself. Because Jameson's been inconsistent the past couple weeks, and this is a team trying to like win the Super Bowl and make the playoffs, they feel like they need to bring in someone who they can trust. That's what I'm scared about. But let's get into the juicer. It's time for the juicer, because this is what all the talk has been about in Dynasty.
Okay.
The new Dynasty QB1.
Yeah, so Ryan Tannehill goes down for the Titans in England. Malik Willis is the one who replaces him in England and just looks flat out awful. Then we start off the game this week with the Titans against the Falcons, and you got Malik Willis out there, and again, does not look good right away. So bam, in comes Will Levis, who's just slinging it. He's taking dropbacks, shoulder pump fakes, flicking the wrist, 50 yards downfield. D-Hop catches 3 touchdowns, and Will Levis has been going crazy now in the Dynasty Fantasy community. The Will Levis talk and decorum it has been absurd because of how great of a game he did have. Frank dubbed it the entire Titans team against Arthur Smith revenge game. So I don't know, guys. Look, Will Levis was never someone that I liked as a quarterback, but he was someone that I've been trying to scoop up a bunch. I picked him up in the second, third, and 20 league, which is a 14 QB league.
Oh,
QB
nice.
Fair.
Yeah, that's a juicer.
Yeah, I drafted him even earlier than I typically would. I drafted him at like 112 in that league. But I was trying to trade up with him in the first third and trade up and snag him in the first third and 20 league. I was trying to draft him in our home league too, simply because of how less valued he was worth. Like he was going in the mid second round. I felt like a quarterback of his caliber that got drafted, while it wasn't a first round pick and it wasn't a top 15 pick, which I typically like, I figured he was going to have a starting opportunity. And typically in these super flex leagues, even if they're not that good, you can still manage to trade those quarterbacks for a second. Like, yeah. Worst case scenario, you have Josh Dobbs getting traded for a third, right? Like, quarterbacks get traded for something. So Geno Smith, for example, was so bad, all of a sudden had a few good games in Seattle prior to him, like, fully breaking out kind of thing. You could have traded Geno Smith for a second, and now you could trade him for more, or you could have. So he was someone that I was trying to pick up just because of how undervalued he's been, and now we have, I don't know, Will Levis pandemonium going on, guys. Like, what do we think? Is this for real? Is there a chance? Let me ask this question first. Is there a chance that they just go straight back to Tannehill
and just, no, sure.
Excuse all. I think there's a legit possibility that they just go back to Tannehill.
You can.
He's our guy.
I'm pretty sure like Levis in one game surpassed Tannehill's touchdowns on the season.
if not close to it.
I think what's tough about this game is that, like, Will Levis, and this is where I think a little bit of the community is wrong, did not look anywhere near as polished as I think people are giving him credit for. Like, people are acting like he went out there and it was like it was a really good debut, don't get me wrong, but like, I think honestly that Bryce Young and CJ Stroud have kind of like just been a little bit more consistent in terms of, like, Will Levis, there's some wacky shit going on in some of those plays, man. But the fact of the matter is, though, is that his aggressiveness was crazy, which I loved. Like, and I think that's just what set him apart from Tannehill. Like, that complete, and also, like, the arm talent just looks insane. Like, those two things, the fact that he was willing to push the ball down the field one-on-one, and he can just fucking flick it down there was nuts.
And kind of the interesting thing about that game, because I went back, and like there was like a video thread with just all of his throws. Some of his like sicker throws of the day were incompletions. They just didn't like end up, the receiver couldn't pull them in. But I mean, obviously everyone's been kind of, the video of his fourth touchdown especially has been the one really blowing up. That throw was like insane. I completely agree with you on Stroud. Other rookie QBs, I think Richardson, when he did play, showed some like really special throws. Bryce Young, I'm like, I think he's getting better. And I feel bad, like, kind of being too harsh on Bryce Young because his receivers are, like, terrible. but I don't know. Like, Bryce Young hasn't had an individual game as good as Levis's first start this year. Stroud has.
Well, here's the difference.
He's improving every week, though.
Bryce Young has operated, to me, at a higher level, more in his games, on average, more than Will Levis did. But Will Levis had the big plays, and those, if you're someone who can consistently make big plays, you win. I mean, that is kind of the NFL right now to an extent. I mean, you have these teams like Josh Allen, some games will, especially when he was up and coming, would struggle a shit ton and then just make a couple crazy plays and they would win the game. So like, in terms of that, that's why I think this is like obviously this is the consensus take, a really great debut, in that You saw what you wanted to see, and even more so to me on the NFL stage, right? Like, I thought I saw Will Levis that was making more plays than he usually did in college.
Yeah.
And what's kind of weird about that is that he's probably under less pressure from the defense, at least that last game. The Falcons really couldn't generate anything. I think they were missing Grady Jarrett, which is a big miss. But, like, he had clean pockets, so in college, he wasn't really used to that, and he was really taking advantage of that.
I will say... Oh, go ahead, Lance.
I was just going to bring up the question if someone... I'm not at this point, but I think it's an interesting thing with what we were kind of talking about pre-pod and we're going to get to later. Like, if someone's just, like, completely sold on just, like, watches the first start and he's like, yeah, Levis is him, like, what would you try to buy for right now? If you just think, like, if you're a believer and you're like, he's going to have more games like this, I'm going to buy him now after one before his price skyrockets even more.
In terms of draft picks, I think his price to me would be a first and a second. I think that is the offer that would, because I don't think people are accepting a singular first unless that thing looks really nice right now.
Yeah.
If it's like a lottery first, or you think it's not, that team's not making the playoffs.
It could potentially be like a top five first.
I'm not including those picks. I'm including it's a playoff team, like let's say 25 or 24.
But then, first and second. If we're saying not lottery first, first and second, I think that's fair. It's weird because I was a 14-team league. I'm thinking in a 12-team league, I probably would sell Levis for that, the first and second. Because here's the thing, though. Like, this is a team that historically, I want to like touch on 3 points here. So I'm going to try and, first I'll backtrack to Bryce Young.
Go for it.
In terms of, Will Levis has the advantage of having two big playmakers there. One super big playmaker in DeAndre Hopkins. Then he's got Derrick Henry keeping teams at bay. And then also Treylon Burks, who can also help stretch the field if needed and can make big plays that way. Whereas Bryce Young, you're never going to see those big plays with the talent that he has. Mm-hmm.
He's a good spot.
It's Adam Thielen, who's nice but old, and then DJ Chark, I guess. Yeah, so I'm still cutting Bryce Young slack. I still think Bryce Young, he's been improving week in, week out. I thought he was overvalued at the beginning of the season. I think it's fine now. Then going back to Will Levis and what we're talking about here, I think the concerns that I still have are, one, while it might seem crazy, I think there's still a chance that this goes back to Tannehill. I agree it would be dumb, but it's the Titans. I don't know. I'm not trusting anything there, which would hurt short-term. Long-term, though, you're still going to get Will Levis a chance. He's going to be fine. He's definitely better than Malik Willis. I think Malik Willis is toast, as an aside.
He's done.
Yeah. And then the other thing about Will Levis is this is still a team that doesn't pass the ball a whole lot. Like he was torching the Falcons, and he still didn't pass more than 30 times. He passed 29 times at 19 completions. So you're still going to – and he's not someone that typically – tucks the ball and runs it a whole lot, like maybe a little bit, but you're not getting the crazy rushing advantage. So with that, I'm gonna say first as a second is fair, and I'm probably just taking that because I don't think Will Levis is anything crazy.
I'm super interested to see how his game Thursday goes against Pittsburgh, because that's a tough defense. It's more so I'm not expecting him to have a good game versus Pittsburgh, because it's kind of rare for young QBs, besides maybe Stroud was played decent, but a lot of times historically young QBs will struggle playing against that defense. If he plays well against Pittsburgh, because the price skyrockets like crazy after last week, then following it up with a good performance against Pittsburgh's defense, it would at that point you start talking I don't even know. If he plays that well, two first.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see. But, the fact of the matter is, man, that arm talent's just so crazy.
Yeah.
And now he came into that game. It looked like he was very confident. And now you see it happen. If you're Will Levis, dude, you're going out there and you're thinking you can make any throw.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. If he can keep making those big plays and those big, deep, crazy throws down the field, he's going to pan out. Because quarterbacks usually can't do that. That's what separates people in the NFL, is those types of... It's either that, or you are so polished that you're just like...
And super accurate, just like methodical.
Right, exactly. Just anticipation, just making correct decisions. But even in the modern game... Most quarterbacks are like those gunslingers, and then they kind of get brought back to taking what the defense gives them. It's not really been where, I guess, other than Brock Purdy, really, these guys that have been I don't have a great arm, I'm just gonna make the correct decisions, and they're just dominant quarterbacks. One thing I disagree with you before we move on from Will Levis, though, one of those points is that you said that they may go back to Tannehill. There is no situation to me where that lasts long term. So I think that even this year, if they went back to Tannehill after the Steelers game, it's just going to at some point this season swap back to Levis, and then I think he gets the hype train again. It may not.
Oh, that part I agree with, yeah. I just think this year they might go back to Tannehill.
Right.
Which would be annoying. And trading a first and second for that to happen would be frustrating. So with that, though, let's move on to some other rookie reports. JSN on his game against the who'd they play? They didn't play
they
the Browns.
They played the Browns.
Right? Oh, yeah, the Browns. I was right.
And he had that game-winning tutty.
Yeah, right at the very end, too. So Jaxon Smith-Njigba has been pretty quiet this year, has been getting outplayed. Sorry, I'm pulling up his stuff. Has been getting outplayed by Jake Bobo at times.
He was getting label. It wasn't just that. He was – people were starting to be like, oh, yeah, I'm regretting this JSN pick. He's trash.
He was getting – we're going to talk about Quinn Johnston in a second. He was getting similar play to Quinn Johnston, but I felt like – Quinn Johnston was getting a lot more hate than JSN, even though we were seeing similar stat lines and everything, similar playing time. I just think we've been spoiled with wide receivers recently, being that, you know, Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, all the like, just Puka. Going nuclear off Puka this year, going just crazy. And people not realizing, hey, like, especially with these teams, which were drafting near the end of the first round, they didn't really need, like, these were kind of more so luxury picks than needs. We were kind of just dinging them too much for lack of production right off the beginning. And I think maybe that's because people like Sky Moore have done that to them and have kind of left a bad taste in the mouth recently. But that being said, JSN did have not a great, like, he had 36 yards and a touchdown, but that's back-to-back weeks of touchdowns, and last week he did put up 63 yards. So we've been seeing steady improvement for him. I think that's been encouraging. I think the Seahawks are going to have a pretty nice schedule to round out this second half of the season. So to me, I think we're bordering wheels up for JSN.
I think it's definitely a huge sigh of relief, because we've seen very successful rookie receivers that have been drafted relatively high come out here and maybe not get crazy snaps, but they will get, they're at least efficient on their targets. They're not like playing 40% of the game and then on four targets doing fucking nothing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, they'll get four targets and they'll actually be good. And that was the problem I think I had with JSN, was like, yeah, fine, he's not playing a lot, whatever. Like you said, we're spoiled by some of these rookie receivers. I'm not drafting JSN to win my league this year. But I am drafting JSN to at least look good and do stuff when he plays and gets targets. And he's at least been doing that now. So when you're just looking at him as a data point, if he can string together more of these types of performances, he will now bring his stock back up closer to average. And at least to me, you have a way bigger claim for me not to be like, yeah, I'm just going to sell your ass for whatever the market's going for.
It is kind of funny that I think we're double counting it. He got dinged first when the draft happened because people were like, oh, he just got drafted behind DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. Like, this is going to suck. And then he actually plays behind DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, and people are like, this sucked. So it does feel like a double counting of that situation happening and hurting his value.
I think that situation still, my take at the time and now is that I think it's just going to get resolved sooner than we expect. Whether that's so JSN just eventually out-snapping one of these guys and out-targeting one of these players, or them leaving when you did not think it was in the outcomes.
Yeah, I agree with that. Anything else you wanted to add, Lunas?
No, that's about it. I agree with you guys on JSN. I'm still super high on him.
Okay, so then moving on to the other guy that we just referenced when talking about these rookie receivers. Quinn Johnston, also, it took basically everyone on the Chargers to get injured, but we did see a Quentin Johnston appearance. He had six targets for five catches and 50 yards, nearly doubling his amount of yards on the season. Actually, yeah, okay, nearly doubling his amount of yards on the season with the 50-yard day. And I think this is kind of shown why we were excited about Quentin Johnston in terms of, I don't know if you saw the one play where they passed it out to him on the left and he was just untackable. I don't know if that's how you say that.
Yeah,
he,
like
they couldn't tackle him.
Yeah,
it took like three or four different players on the Bears to try and bring down Quinn Johnston. And he's got that yak ability. And I just felt like he was being misused in terms of the Chargers were just using him to take the top off defenses and use him as a field stretcher. Meanwhile, he's always been a yak guy. Yards after catch. So it was nice and encouraging to see Quinn Johnston do something against a team, albeit one of the worst defenses in the league, in the Chicago Bears. But I don't know. I guess
I thought
it just means he's not dead. He's not dead.
I thought the most encouraging part was it looked like Herbert trusted him way more that game. Like, I hadn't really seen Herbert throwing a ton of like 50-50 jump balls, like on like fade routes or like back shoulder passes to him. I thought he was getting much more looks. And I know it's like some guys are hurt, but that kind of wasn't even happening earlier with like Palmer was getting way more looks. So I thought that was the most encouraging part. That's just kind of like Herbert trusts him more. Because if that continues, then Quinn Johnson will be able to make plays just because of how like crazy athletic he is.
He was also on the field for 70% of the snaps, which was a big increase from was only hovering around 50% the entire season.
I think that whether you like Quentin Johnston or not, right now you should not be selling him. Because right now, that performance to me, it only increased his value for the people that had him. And he still has just like tremendous upside. If he goes out there and puts up a 15-point week, Quentin Johnston instantly pops back up to his draft value. Somewhere around there, at least. So this is an easy hold.
Yeah, agreed.
Whereas I think 100%. JSN, like, you can sell JSN right now. Even if you like JSN, like, he carries enough value to where you can make an argument, oh, maybe I'm a contender and I just want to trade him for someone who's going to score me more points. Or, like, I'll pay a little bit more and get a different rookie player that I like more now. Maybe, like, Puka, right? But JSN, it is just, to me, a bad decision to sell right now. Because his price, is to me, is almost as if he's a bust. You know, he's reached that second round. There's no point in selling him for a second round pick, and even if it's an early one. There's no point.
Mm-hmm. Okay, moving on. We did have in the Monday night game, I'm not going to say it's a coming out party because Jahmyr Gibbs was steadily increasing. He had a big week last week, but monster week this week against the Raiders with Jahmyr Gibbs. I'm pulling up his stat line right now where he had 26 carries for 152 yards, as well as 5 catches for 37 yards, and a touchdown on top of that. Monster week for JSN, 27.5-point PPR points.
Gibbs.
To back up his last week. Gibbs to back up his 23 points in the prior week against Baltimore. I don't know, guys. This feels like kind of what we expect now.
Going to be tough with Montgomery coming back at some point.
I was going to say the same thing.
The problem I have with Gibbs, which is annoying, is Dan Campbell's like, yeah, he's small. We're not going to use him in the red zone. We'll just use the other running back in the red zone. So that really hinders his touchdown ability. Like, he needs those long touchdowns to be worth, or not worth, but to really give you like a solid, very solid outing. That's frustrating. Other than that, though, we're talking about a guy who has shown now he can handle a workload, albeit it's a 1 week or I guess maybe 2 weeks of just a bunch of sustained targets. Like, he had 21 touches last week. He had 31 touches this week, despite him being quote-unquote undersized. But, yeah, I don't know. I think he's shown what he can do, Jahmyr Gibbs, in terms of both as a runner and as a pass catcher. And to me, it feels like at this point, you're not going to be able to get him for anything more than
he's in the top five running back conversation firmly.
Yeah.
Borderline argument for like RB2.
He would have such a good case if I didn't think Dan Campbell was as stubborn as he is about Montgomery. Because I was going to say, you have to be super encouraged by what he's showing. He showed like he's a beast already as a rookie and he can handle high usage. It's just I had no idea how Campbell's going to be with like the Montgomery thing. And like we all saw the video of his presser a couple weeks ago. To be fair, that was before these past 2 weeks of Gibbs going off. So if he changes mind, but it's not like Montgomery was playing bad when Montgomery was healthy. He was still like pretty productive. I think not as good as Gibbs, but like still pretty good. So that's the only annoying part. But I mean, I'd be extremely encouraged. I think talent-wise, yeah, he's a case for RB2. I'd probably say who's in that range? It's like him. I think Breece Hall is still RB2, but Gibbs is
Bijan, obviously. And Bijan, I still think that A-Chain has a shout from what A-Chain, he was showing.
I can't wait for him to come back.
Probably lost that hype that he had earlier in the season, but he's still going to be valued around in that realm.
I don't think he should lose too much, because have you seen how much like Mostert's been scoring? Like, he's going to get a ton of those opportunities.
Yeah, Mostert was doing that with A-Chain there too, though.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
that's fair.
With Gibbs, one thing, this game yesterday, it was yesterday, right? I'm not losing my mind.
Yep. We're recording on Tuesday. It happened Monday night.
Yeah, I was just like, was that Sunday night or Monday night? I think this was huge for Gibbs because Gibbs showed his ability to be able to manufacture rushing yards when the defense knew it was coming late in the game. That, to me, was his problem and why he wasn't seeing the amount of touches that we wanted to see. Is because, yes, he had some really nice plays, but for all the nice plays, there was plays where he would just not execute the run scheme correctly and it would go for less yards than it should have. Whereas Montgomery was kind of the exact opposite. Montgomery was lacking those explosive plays, but generally speaking, executed the run scheme at a higher level. Now, that last game, we saw Gibbs have a crap ton of production and big plays while the defense knows it's coming. While they need to put the game away, they're up and they need to run the ball. That's huge. That's exactly what the Lions are looking for. The only thing I don't like about this scheme and what's going to happen is that their play action is like so vertical with their receivers and their tight ends. It's like such a hard run fake that I feel like their running back never gets the check down. Like Amon-Ra and their tight end and even like Reynolds and whatnot are just being so productive on these plays and they are so efficient.
Yeah.
They're never getting to that check down. And with the rest, like because their offense is working, they're able to run the ball when they're up and their play action is so successful. They don't need to get into a pure drop back scenario where Gibbs is going to eat check downs, kind of like Kamara is right now for the Saints.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the thing that I don't like is that I thought Gibbs was going to be a dude that could come in here and be like a top three receiving back out the gate. And that does not look like it's going to be the chance whatsoever.
There's still time, I think.
I was still more talking about for this season. Because if you're going to rank him RB2, you got to be good for me now. Right? Like, you got to be elite.
Yeah. Yeah. RB2 feels like a lot.
But that's the price you have to pay right now, right?
Like, it is. Or else you're not getting. I'm probably not.
And I'm not investing in Gibbs. So I'm on your page here, JT. Like, yeah, he's good. If you have him, fine. But I would probably
also look at, we're not really talking, but I think ETN is in that running for RB2 also.
His
usage is bell cow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you want to talk about like top five receiving back, like ETN.
Is Gibbs worth more than ETN?
I would assume so.
Is there any like exploitable price difference? Because I would do that in a heartbeat.
Flipping Gibbs for ETN. Yeah, ETN is like what you're hoping Gibbs becomes. And ETN's still pretty young.
But I don't know. I may wait because I feel like it's that year two. You want to wait till that year two when they're firmly like that RB2.
ETN is worth slightly more than Gibbs, apparently. Okay. He's running back 4, Gibbs is running back 5, but they're like the same.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I'm starting to get to the point where I would think about selling Gibbs.
Okay.
For that. I'm not price. Against.
Yeah, I'm not against doing that. Last one for the rookie report, someone that I just tossed in here at the end. DeMario Douglas, so this Patriots offense is devoid of most talent, but DeMario Douglas did lead the Patriots receivers in targets last week. He had 7 targets. Next highest receiver on the Patriots was Kendrick Bourne with 4, but Kendrick Bourne just tore his ACL and is out for the season. So we're looking at a receiving core of Juju Smith-Schuster, Devontae Parker, Jalen Reagor, Kayshon Boutte, and DeMario Douglas. And it looks like DeMario Douglas is the guy taking the opportunities, opportunity to its fullest. He had 77% of the snaps last week, 77% this week, 62% last week. Big uptick in snap percentage from what we were seeing prior. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of one of those cases where it's like, yeah, this offense looks awful again, but similar to the Panthers, like someone on this team has to score points. It has been Ramondre Stevenson for the most part, and then the tight ends. But I think as far as a person that's almost free, I mean, he was available on waivers at the beginning of the season. He's probably not. I feel like even a third round pick is rich. I don't know if you would have to part with a third round pick for DeMario Douglas, but if you do.
I think right now you're talking about?
Yeah.
Oh, I was thinking late second.
You think so? I don't think people have caught on yet. Because, I mean, if we're talking about a strictly from a points perspective, right? He scored 5 points this week in half PPR.
Oh, shit.
He scored 5 points this week, 9 points the week prior. It's not like he's putting up points yet, right? Well, it's the same thing that you see with a lot of these receivers, especially in New England where they don't score the touchdowns yet. Like Jacoby Myers, you're seeing the same thing. Guy was scoring, like he was getting a ton of targets, leading the team in targets, scoring points, but the touchdowns weren't happening. So he's kind of just flying under the radar. And now we see him on Las Vegas kind of doing the thing there, you know, out targeting Davante Adams. So it's same thing for DeMario Douglas, where it's just he's getting a bunch of targets, but there's not a whole lot of points yet to back it. And at some point that's going to change. And I'll add in for the season up until last week, that was DeAndre Hopkins. DeAndre Hopkins was going crazy in terms of target percentage, getting a ton of targets every game. But like Lewis was saying in the beginning, Tannehill wasn't throwing any touchdowns. And then all it takes is that 1 week, like we saw, where D-Hop then catches three touchdowns, puts up like 40 points in PPR. And it's a totally different story. So a late second, I feel like, definitely gets you DeMario Douglas.
Sure.
And I guess that's fine. I'm much more willingly burn a third on DeMario Douglas in the hopes that he ends up panning out. And I think that's probably a price you could get him for.
Liz, do you have any thoughts on Mr. Douglas?
I'm with JT, where I still think you could probably get for in like the third round value range before, because people like, you would have to like really be like watching these Patriots teams on offense to see like his like explosiveness and kind of quickness, or like really focusing in on the targets, because I feel like he hasn't really gotten like too much attention yet. So I do actually love him as a buy right now.
I don't know what sleeper counts, if it's all leagues or what, like just dynasty. I think it might be all leagues, which is annoying because I don't get the full scope. But he's only owned in 66% of leagues, according to Sleeper. So if that's including Dynasty, like you get him on waivers potentially, definitely throw a waiver claim on him. If not, I mean, in every Dynasty league I'm in, I'm pulling it up. He's on a team, so take that as you will. But for a third round pick, maybe offer a fourth first, see what the person's interested in. Maybe you have a bigger name player on your team, like I don't know, a Chase Claypool, for example. You could do a Chase Claypool plus some kind of pick swap into DeMario Douglas. You have options here to get him for a pretty cheap price, I would say. Anything else okay. You guys have on rookies?
Yes, I have everything to say. All aboard the fucking ship, boys. Because okay, ship, DeMario Douglas is that dude.
Okay.
This is Darnell Mooney. This is Gabriel Davis. This is Jacoby Myers. DeMario Douglas is this kind of player. You very, very rarely see players with this low-end draft capital sustaining and gaining snaps throughout the season. This is the time, lads. Because even if you buy him for a late second, I think he goes for more. 2 years from now, a year from now, and this is a chance to earn the trust of the offense for years to come. It makes sense for the Patriots. They're going to incentivize this because of their good cap scenario, getting a wide receiver. These motherfuckers haven't hit a receiver since Vietnam, all right? This is it. This is it. If you can get DeMario Douglas for a third, you smash that through your phone. I mean, you should be breaking the sleeper servers offering out trades for thirds if we can actually get him for that. And I will be doing that later this evening. But if I'm thinking about contender leagues and I have my pirate ship, I'm the fucking captain of the ship, baby. I think giving up a late second for DeMario Douglas is worth. I think it's worth. Like, if I'm going to try to get him for cheaper, but honestly, I think he is worth a late second round pick.
Yeah, I definitely don't think you have to pay the late second round pick. Do I think it's worth?
I think value wise that'll pay off.
Like, if I had to rank DeMario Douglas right now, I'm putting him around like 208, 209 territory.
Okay. I mean, to put a visual, that would have been, let's see what it would have been this year. Draft history. Sorry, draft results. We are looking at 208, 209. If my phone ever wants to load, we are looking at Roschon Johnson, Josh Downs, Tyjae Spears, Jalen Hyatt. Those are the guys in that realm. Okay.
Would you rather have Jalen Hyatt or DeMario Douglas right now? And that's kind of unfair because Jalen Hyatt has like looked pretty good for someone picked in that range. Like, I think anyone who drafted him late second is pretty happy.
Oh, dude, I don't know how I ended up on. I don't know how I ended up on Dalton Kincaid because I was looking at the rookie board, but I was like, how did Jalen Hyatt score 17 PPR points in a game where the Giants had -9 receiving yards? But no, yeah, Jalen Hyatt put up 0 points last week. They're very different players in terms of Hyatt's that lanky kind of over the top guy, can stretch the field. DeMario Douglas is the smaller slot guy. You know, one's from SEC Tennessee, one's from Liberty. I think you're getting very different vibes. I kind of just bet on the DeMario Douglas profile more than the Jalen Hyatt profile. You did obviously get the bigger swings with Jalen Hyatt, but I guess I would take DeMario Douglas.
I like them both. I got both of them on a lot of teams. I would probably just take DeMario Douglas right now. I think DeMario Douglas's floor is really underpriced, and that's why I want to buy. The upside is the question mark. I really don't know what DeMario Douglas's upside is, but the fact of the matter is that to me, a lot of the risk that other people see is that this guy is just going to vanish into dust. I really, like, yes, I can understand that, but with the Patriots situation, I just feel like there's very little outcomes where DeMario Douglas is not like pretty involved in this offense next year.
They would have to overhaul the entire team to really phase him out, because I mean this team needs a lot.
Yeah, they already need three receivers, so like
yeah so for him to not be involved, they would need
and if they can if one of those receivers helps them score more touchdowns, that helps DeMario Douglas. So
well, and also, like, think about this is a team that did just 2 maybe 3 years ago at this point spend a ton of money on the offense, right? We brought in John Smith, Hunter Henry, Juju just recently. You know, I am a Patriots fan. They spent high draft capital on Tyquan Thornton, and there's nothing to show for it. I mean, Mike Gesicki and Hunter Henry have been fine. Like, they've been serviceable. Well, Mike Gesicki's new, by the way, but John Smith got traded for peanuts. He's gone already. Like, this is not a team that's really shown to spend their money wisely at the position, and then they just have these random guys like DeMario Douglas come in and do what the other players should have been doing. Because, yeah, he's I think he was drafted, right? I think he was like a sixth round pick or seven. I don't think he's an undrafted, yeah, which typically fits the mold. He was a late round draft pick, right? And he's eating Devontae Parker's lunch, who they traded a third for and then extended for whatever reason. As a frustrated Patriots fan, I'm saying that. I'm in on DeMario Douglas as well, Frank, because I agree that he is going to have a lasting time on this team. I am interested in, now that Kendrick Bourne is gone for the season, if Kayshon ever does get some play. It seems like he's very much in Belichick's doghouse, which does fit the mold of what we're seeing, like character concerns at LSU, ankle injuries that's been holding him back. It does seem dead, but if there was ever a time, if there was ever a time for Kayshawn to show up, now would be it. This is your opportunity.
I don't think now would be the time. And really? The reason for that is because when I was looking weeks ago now into DeMario Douglas and Kayshawn Boutte and how to value him at that point, I started looking at a lot of undrafted to late round pick receivers, and a lot of these players saw the field way earlier than you would think. Like, way earlier. Okay. And actually getting a decent amount of snaps. But the one, you know, anywhere between week one and, like, I don't know, like week 12, right? Like, and this is for their rookie year, right? So, in all things considered, very early on. And there was a lot of them that would play a decent amount of snaps for like one, two games and then vanish. And I can tell you what, the list of busts for those types of players was a whole lot longer than the list of players that ended up hitting. So if I see that, I am out. Like, capital O out. And yeah, obviously Kayshawn Boutte was, you know, by the time the draft happened, not a high hit rate type of player, but you may have been able to sell something, you know, week three, because he at least was on the field and getting targets the first 2 weeks. So, yeah. And on the contrary, right, like the players that did show promise were the ones that at some point during the season, you know, hung around and then their snap share increased, right? And their target shares increased, which I think, yes, it may be due to injury, but if that happens for DeMario Douglas, that's the type of player I want to invest in at his price. Because those players, just generally speaking, I think can do well long-term and be these underpriced type of players that give your team a good flex play.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a kind of it's just been a sticking with my priors thing for Kayshawn. I just want him to break out, and it does feel like that's not ever going to happen, even though we're only 8 weeks into the season. All right, last segment. This one was kind of, I'm going to give Frank the credit here. It was a topic that Frank and I were talking about off the pod not too long ago, and the concept of it was acting quickly on players. And Frank, I'm going to kind of tee you off for you here and let you take the lead.
Right. So, yeah, me and JT, we were just hanging out talking the other day. And one thing, I don't know how it got brought up, but the basic premise was, what I have noticed in my leagues is that, and most of my leagues now, you know, they're starting to get pretty mature. There's been a lot of churn at the top, right? Some teams being good early on are now the worst teams in the league and all that sort of stuff. I feel like the common trend has been these managers that are willing to act quickly on players and kind of have some cojones in these kind of like crazy scenarios have been the ones that usually get out ahead. Like, don't get me wrong, there are some of these scenarios that bone you, but we can start going through them systematically and kind of talking about them, because you can kind of use this acting quickly in a lot of different ways. So I think the one that the sharpest players do are these people that buy up-and-coming blue-chip players when they're in a range where people are uncomfortable to pick them. So I think the number one example to me is Jalen Hurts. Because Jalen Hurts had that period of time where he was in that, like, mid-second to, like, sometimes early third, right, range where there was a whole lot of people who were like, oh my God, he's the franchise quarterback, best guy ever. And a whole lot of people were like, well, this guy's not going to be starting, right? And I think that Jalen Hurts' scenario is a whole lot different than the I drafted the quarterback that I liked at the top end of the draft and I'm just hoping he's good kind of scenario, right? Jalen Hurts was a second round, like mid to late second round dynasty pick, and ascended into a high-ass dynasty, and obviously he's like QB3 right now. And when I go across my leagues, there's a whole lot of people who have Jalen Hurts that did not draft him. And in some of my leagues, these guys, they traded a decent amount at the time, But it's Penna, and there's so many players like that. The people who traded for Puka in the beginning of this season, I'm going to imagine that a whole lot of those people who were shelling out a singular late first for Puka early on are some of the sharper players in your dynasty leagues. And I just think that's the first topic, and how I'm going to try to change my play going forward to emulate this. And when there is a scenario where there is a player that has just a rapid acceleration, instead of being like, you know what, I'm going to sit out on the sidelines for this, I may pay that initial overmarket. So Will Levis may be an example of that right now, right? A guy who's just kind of rapidly ascended. We're like, oh my God, we don't know. Maybe Tannehill comes back in and plays. Well, if you gave up the first and the second, he ends up panning out. That's going to be a pretty big value gaining move. Imagine if you get him for even less. If you try to do some creative trade strategies, offering players instead of picks, doing pick swaps, things of that nature. This, to me, is a way that you can really get an advantage. And if you don't, the sharp players in your league will. So they're going to end up building really good teams by making these moves. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts. But to me, that's numero uno. I'm going to change my play going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I tried being that early actor on Puka. And to be fair, Luke Musgrave too. I offered what was like a mid-first round pick and a third round pick for those two, which I thought was overpaying by a decent amount. It got rejected. This was after week one, I think. So we did have the big Puka game, but we weren't really
seeing much yet
for Musgrave. Yeah, and it was only one game. Got rejected. More so for Musgrave than Puka, by the way. But yeah, that got rejected, and now that would be such an underpay for those two. Like, it's crazy. Obviously, it's not all going to work. Like, Puka's a one-of-a-kind case where he's leading the NFL in receptions right now, or rookies in receptions, and he's just not profiled as to be that coming out, not being a day one or two pick. But when we talk about the early action and everything, in terms of getting those blue chip players, I agree, Frank. I don't want to derail us from that part of it yet, if you want to add anything else. But then I want to flip to the other aspect that we were talking about with acting quickly.
Right. So
if you want to go there.
Mm-hmm. I think that the way that this can be taken out of hand is you just start offering out all of your picks and depth for blue chip assets whenever they start to come about. I don't think that that's right? Like, you still need to be doing good dynasty things, right? Like, trying to get decent deals. But to me, these are, like, value creation moves, right? I trade my late first for Puka, very beginning of the season, and then I sell him for a first and 2 seconds. And now I have created 2 seconds, right? Like, and on the contrary, right, when you have a move that does not pan out in your favor, right, let's say Puka ended up being Travis Fulgham, instead of just riding that wave out, I think that these guys who are very active, and at least the good ones who are very active, right, not the players that just trade away all their shit and all of a sudden they traded for a bunch of players and they're bag holding, instead of bag holding, they also act quickly on the sell. They're like, oh shit, 2 weeks later, this hasn't panned out. Instead of sitting here crying, I'm going to try and make a trade to extract some value. Like, yeah, they'll end up losing the trade, but instead of losing in the long run, they'll just take a small value hit, and at least they're still in the game, right? They can use those assets that they got to do that again the next season, and then eventually it's going to hit. So, like, you know, now we can get into the second part of this, because I think, you know, a lot of people would agree with me with the first point, but selling early. Right, like, and selling early is a very nuanced discussion because you do have to have patience in some scenarios. So, like, we can start getting into some of the cases if you want. I think the first case we can bring up is these, you know, first round rookie pick wide receivers, right? Let's say you have Quentin Johnston, you have JSN. I mean, if you're an early mover, if you're trying to be an early mover, does that mean selling these players for slight value?
Yeah, well, if you're going to, you should do it quickly, like first 2 or 3 weeks, and just flipping them for a first. Like, that's the thing. Like, if you just re-roll, I think it's fine, because it's going to be same scenario basically every year, right? You're going to end up, you do have the upside of, especially if you're trading for these, you know, first 2 or 3 weeks in the season, that first round pick can be anywhere because injuries happen, teams don't pan out like you expect them to, you know, marquee players don't end up doing what they're supposed to. So if you're trading for that first, worst case scenario, it's an end of the first round kind of pick, which is essentially where you're drafting Quinn Johnston and JSN in the first place. I mean, maybe you draft them at 108, 107. You're not getting them much higher than that. Now you're picking at 110, 111, 112. Well, there's still good players there. You had, you know, Justin Jefferson, if you think about in recent years, Chris Olave. There's very good wide receivers in that range still. So it's a re-roll. And at that point, you're saying, hey, I want this guy to break out in the first few weeks. He didn't. I'm just going to re-roll it. Maybe that pick ends up monumentally better. If not, I'm essentially getting the same value. Sure. But now where we are in terms of like you've held for 6, 7, 8 weeks and this player has just dropped in value more so Quinn Johnston than JSN. I think Quinn Johnston's definitely taken a bigger hit than JSN. I think that's the time when you hold, because what you're going to see coming into year two is you're going to have it without fail happens every year. I mean, unless you get some crazy off the field issues, which have happened in the past. I'm just going to ignore those, though, because they're such aberrations and shouldn't be outliers, shouldn't be counted on. What you're going to have is you're going to have the videos of them doing the ladders or whatever. You're going to have them working out in shorts. You're going to have, oh, he's been studying all offseason with state quarterback name here. Like, he's been working out with this guy, blah, 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 blah. And you're just going to get the hype of selling him for essentially what you had him for or higher. Yeah. So you get the benefit of holding him on to him for the year, even if he doesn't pan out for the year, which I'm not saying that's always the case, right? Like, we could have JSN or Quinn Johnston just pop off here, and then you're like, okay, fine, we're chilling again. I can move on from him if I want to for about the same price I drafted him out at. If not, I'm going to roll into the second season with him. Maybe he'll fully break out. But otherwise, you're going to be able to move him for more than you are right now. It's just right now is kind of like the low spot, and it's going to maintain that low spot until the second season starts. And if you continue to have a bad second season, that's when the floor starts to fall out. We've seen it with in recent years, Rashad Bateman, Sky Moore, Elijah Moore. Then he kind of bounced back, but Elijah Moore. And now we've got Sky Moore as well. So, yeah, I don't know. I think there's, if you're going to act quick, you do it first 2, 3, 4th week the latest. And then if you're not doing those quick movers, you're holding.
So yeah, real quick, I just want to say, I do agree with both ways of approaching will ultimately lead to like your dynasty team success. I just would always have like so much more confidence doing the latter, where I'm like willing to take the risk on buying someone who's like shown it early on. And before, like, their value fully adjusts if they do it for a few weeks versus, like, because you are right, JT, in terms of, like, if you are going to sell, you have to do it early before it ends up, like, a situation where it's, like, week 6 or 7, he hasn't, like, they haven't done anything. And then, like, then you're just losing value at that point. But then it's also, like, it's I guess that's just, like, the tricky part of, like, Dynasty ultimately. Like, you have to be able to judge that early whether or not, like, is it just because they're getting this rookie adjusted or, like, being able to get that reroll. So that's what makes I say like the latter, the second part in terms of selling a lot harder.
So where I am going to say is that I think that you can kind of figure that out if you kind of separate how you treat different like player classes, right? So in my argument, because one player that I was thinking about is Jonathan Taylor, right? Jonathan Taylor, first half of the season was not good. I mean, people were calling him the next Trent Richardson. But I am so, like, yeah. I love Jonathan Taylor pre-draft. Even if I wanted to follow this, I was not selling his ass. And I'm like, well, why wouldn't I sell his ass? To me, if you have a super blue chip prospect, you just do not sell them first season. fact of the matter is that
falls into that category for you.
Top six first round picks.
Top six, yeah.
Okay.
Generally speaking, I think that there's very limited scenarios where selling them super early at a slight loss makes sense. Because I think just hit rate speaking, they're more likely to break out than they are to fail in their first season. So selling them super early on doesn't make sense. You're okay. Selling at a discount when you're actually in a relatively favorable position. But then if we go into the next class of players, I do think we can do it. Because now your hit rate is... So I'm pretty sure... I don't remember off the top of my head. You may want to do some Google searches if you're going to live by this. I think the hit rate of outside of the top two picks, like picks 3 through 6, is somewhere just shy of 60% of being like a good dynasty player. Or like having a one breakout season, one of the two. The back end picks, I don't really know what they are. I have to imagine that they're just about 50-50. Or maybe like slightly less or slightly more than 50-50. But let's just assume that they're slightly less than 50-50. Then I do think it makes sense if you can sell early to re-roll, right? Let's say you can get a first round picks after the first 3 weeks of the season. You can get a random contender first. I do think that that might be worth.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's kind of the point I was saying. Because first off, that contender first might not be a contender first.
Yeah.
Like, it might be a lottery first, in which case you get that 60% that you're saying, or higher, potentially. And then second, yeah, the worst case scenario, you just get another player with a similar profile that you can then just do the same thing with again.
I mean, are we willing to throw a third on this to get it done if we had to?
Yeah. I mean, if I'm
my general stance with trades a lot of times, if it's like stuff involving higher end assets and like the first round range and stuff, if a third gets the deal done, I'm rarely ever like not doing it.
I don't know. I'm nailing thirds, bro.
Yeah, you asked.
Thirds have been pretty favorable recently. I would say, without doing any research, like zero research on this, I would say the third round picks have been hitting at a higher rate recently.
Listen, man, it's not in every league. It doesn't always work out, but I am like the late round pick guy. And guess who has all the good late round guys this year? You know, I got them in every league. Right? I basically covered the floor except for like one or two players. I had them all.
You just promoted, you've promoted Puka against me in the 3rd and 20 league.
So, I had them all. I mean, listen, it's not like 100% ownership with any of these dudes, but I got all of them in some leagues. Like,
but anything else about acting quickly? Yep.
Yeah. So, one of your other points, JT, was about bag holding, and I forget exactly what it was, but basically, you said that you don't want to hold into the second season because that's when the floor really bottoms out.
Sorry, you can. But if you're going to hold, you better be ready to act quick. Like, if first 2 weeks, if that. Like, 2, maybe 3 weeks again. Like, you better be ready to just say, hey, this is not working, I'm done. Like, just instant.
So, my argument against that is that I have seen so many of these players lose a shit ton of value at mainly the draft, but also free agency. But I think the draft is a really big killer because I think we saw that with Jalen Reagor when they traded up for Devontae Smith. We saw that with Rashad Bateman when they drafted Zay Flowers. Or that may have been after year two.
That was Bateman's third year.
Third year? Okay.
And Bateman gained value his second year. Yeah, okay. Bateman gained value his second year because they traded away Hollywood Brown during the draft.
Yeah. Okay. So he stonked.
Yeah.
I'd have to go back and look at more. Maybe it's the second, but that I will say, I want to act at the end of the season, you know, January, February, instead of having that risk of the draft and free agency boning me. I guess it could help you too, which, like, in that Hollywood instance. So it's something I have to look into, but that is something that I've definitely thought about, especially in the case of Rager, because I remember I bought him during free agency period, and he literally, he didn't even make it until the season started. Right? Yeah, like, by the time the season started, he was cooked.
Yeah. He kind of feels like an exception to the rule because of how poorly it did go.
Yeah, but even in his second season, there was like a small stretch in the beginning. Like, I remember he had like a good first game that if you wanted to get off, you could still.
There's always opportunities that will open up.
Yeah.
There's still people on Twitter a couple weeks ago saying that you could buy, now's the time to go out and get friggin' Terrace Marshall because he had like 10 targets in the game. And I think he's like not even playing right now for the Panthers. So there's always times to get back out on players if you have to.
So the other things I would group under acting quickly are, one, selling rising players quickly. And I think that this is something that I've at least done a good job. And the reason, like, looking at why at least I think I'm a good dynasty player. I have some leagues where I am, some where you can look at the scoreboard. I have not been.
But dude, this would be kind of
rough.
this would be kind of the opposite of the very first thing we said.
Well,
right.
I think once again you have to break it into classes of player, because I'm gonna come and talk more in like these third roundy kind of guys, second roundy kind of players, increasing their value, especially when they're like not elite. So Brian Robinson, I think, is a good example.
Okay, no, I get what you're saying.
And even when, like, some of these players, like a DeMario Douglas, I think, can enter that territory at a certain point, right? When he, let's say DeMario Douglas goes out the next 2 weeks and puts up back-to-back 15-point games, and everyone's like, I'd pay an early second. Let's just imagine that's a scenario. Then, yeah, you sell DeMario Douglas, mm-hmm. right? Because he's just reached a threshold where it's a little bit unreasonable. I think that happens constantly in Dynasty. I mean, you could just look at Keep Trade Cut and the fluctuation of players, and it proves it to you that there are so many times where players will get way too hyped. Everyone thinks, well, now that he's been good for six games, this is definitely going to happen for the next 6 years. And then, like Brian Robinson, right? I love Brian Robinson. I think he's a great player. I drafted him with a shit ton of third-round picks. I literally join leagues just to draft him at the end of startup drafts.
Yeah, so I think those situations do kind of get hard to touch, because I think it's specifically those like mid-round guys where they're not elite talents, but they're producing early on just because of their usage. Like with Brian Robinson, it was just because like he's getting these 20 touches a game. But then I think then that becomes on you as like a dynasty manager to differentiate the guys who are getting usage but went mid or late round, like a Brian Robinson, versus people who may have been skeptical about Puka because it's like, oh, who else do they have to throw the ball to? And then it ends up being just like a stud.
Well, I don't know. I think part of it is that he's a running back. And
I mean, yeah, positional value. But yeah.
We've seen running backs and how that kind of goes. Also, I don't know. I'm just kind of like a running back guy. I feel like I'm pretty good at, I'm able to just draw a fine line between the running backs that I would hold long term and the ones I would not.
So, you buying, you still believe in Kendre Miller? Were you a Kendre Miller guy?
I don't have any.
I was debating sending out a couple offers.
I like Kendre Miller. I just liked A-Chain more. So
no, I know you were high on A-Chain, yeah.
I mean, they're getting drafted back to back. So I also had Charbonnet higher because of his second round draft capital. So like I was just gonna end up with one of those two guys before Kendre. But I do like Kendre Miller.
You guys have me curious. I'm gonna pull up something.
At least because I may have had Kendre over Charbonnet.
I remember he liked it. I've been like, he's been another guy I've been like debating sending up because he hasn't done like too much yet. And Kamara's just getting like this crazy usage. So I feel like it's kind of one of those things that by like next season or Kamara gets like, he's getting older, if he gets hurt, if Kendre kind of fills that role.
I just don't think it's worth, like, because to me, Kendre Miller probably still holds late second value. It may be even more, and I'm probably not worth I'm probably not willing to pay that price of admission right now. I think you just have way better ways of using your second. If it's a late second, then I'm going to think about it. But I'm just thinking about, like, if I offered that, I don't think that's getting accepted anywhere.
That's fair.
Like, JT, you're not selling me a Kendre for a late second.
No.
Exactly. No one's selling
I wish we had our names going next to people that we drafted, because I was looking at our mock draft from May, beginning of May 2023, and Kendre Miller went 204. But he was behind A-Chain, who went 112, which at the time, I think that felt really high. You were taking A-Chain there, and now it's an easy steal.
I think there's a decent argument, though, that you can make that A-Chain is overpriced. Now, I'm just a truther, and I'm unwilling to sell any of them, but...
You can make that argument, but even saying he's overpriced, you're definitely getting way more than 112 for A-Chain.
Yeah, true. Yeah, true. So, yeah, okay. In terms of acting quickly as well, last point, because I honestly forgot the point I made beforehand. Oh, selling players early. I don't know. I guess last point on that before I want to move on is that what I have done, at least, is just kind of drawn a line in the sand from players that I really think are just – can reach a level of like ridiculous production. And I guess the two ways to come to that conclusion is either you watch film and just think that from watching film, or two, you have some sort of statistic or data point that is an outlier in a good way that is leading you to think that that's going to equal more fantasy points than the other guys at that position.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I think for receivers, it's a lot easier than running backs, because I'm a film guy for running backs. But receivers, it's like target share, dude.
Yeah.
If you're a young player that's getting a crap ton of targets, I'm probably not going to sell you, and I'm probably going to want to buy you.
100%.
And then the last thing I would say is with free agent auction budget. I think the auction budget is the most overvalued asset in Dynasty, and I am firing that from the hip. Like, half my leagues I spent all week
one. I was thinking about that this year. Like, I was like made like the dumb decision of like kind of week one being like, oh, I'll conserve my, I have like $100 still like in our like main home league, and I'm just like, I would have much rather just like drop this on like the first person like week one or two.
Yeah, I used to be available. A guy where I would literally just spend all of it, which is just egregious, on like anyone that I deemed worth a third. Do not have to go that crazy. I've learned that. But I am going to get these dudes. Like, I am going to be bidding a lot and keeping, because I think for like the end of the year, I just need it so that if I want to get this one random dude, if someone puts in a zero, I just can put in a one or a two or a three and get him. Like,
yeah.
Maybe like a Jalen Naylor. If he gets, let's say he's on waivers and gets activated off IR this week, there might be another dude who looks at the PFF guys and then sees that he has this ridiculously high PFF receiving grade and are like, you know, screw it, I'll throw a waiver claim on him. Like, yeah. I just need ones so that I can outbid those.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or those rant like Bajan before he broke out, before he even was like the starter. Because I tried picking him up in one of the third and 20 leagues, and this was before Justin Fields even got hurt. And it just so happened that someone else snagged them too. So yeah, I guess having those one to two to just give you that little extra edge would be nice.
Yeah, but otherwise, I feel like it's useless. A lot of waivers is more about being active and getting the claims in than it is about tactically doing these waiver claims and putting the perfect amount on it. Like, dude, I mean, once it comes to like week nine, half the league isn't even putting in claims on people consistently. So if you're doing that, you're going to get players.
Yeah. And the whole like, oh, I'll use 30% on this guy, 22% on this guy. It's just like, well, it depends on your league mates, but there's going to be a week where some guy just gets 100% thrown at him, and it doesn't matter if you, I'll do 42% or whatever. And
yeah.
Yeah, you're going to have other weeks where everyone else is just inactive and doesn't even care to pick up the guy. there's a lot of overthinking that can go into.
Oh, there's a shit. If there's anyone ever worth a second round pick on waivers, I will bid every dollar that I have in my league to acquire that player. I will do it for an early third round pick valuation player as well. I have drawn the line at mid third because I, a couple years ago, dropped all the budget on Jameson Crowder, and that was just not worth.
Yeah, I can see that.
But look at me now. I still don't give a fuck because my team is nasty. Like,
yeah.
Oh, I wasted all my auction budget. Oh my god, I'm gonna lose my fucking league now. Oh.
You can buy like fab off people by offering.
No, never
like,
buy fab. Never buy fab. If you buy fab, you are a
fucking
loser.
I'm not saying to do it. I'm just
the
saying.
The only time you ever buy fab is if there's a second round dude on there and you can get that fab to outbid everyone else because it's cheaper than just buying the player outright. It's the only opportunity where it makes sense. Or maybe if you sell someone really shitty for fab, like terrible.
I did that once.
I'm pretty sure I traded my fab for players.
I did that once in my like college dynasty league. There's like a taco in our league who accidentally dropped this rookie that was like second round pick value, and I immediately like offered a fifth to get like 25 fab just so I can be at 125 and get the person.
Yeah,
but
that's fine.
No, that'd be the only scenario.
Justified, but yeah, dude, I'm fab.
I do agree. Overrated asset.
I'll go out here and have better waivers.
I was literally thinking about that.
I will say it is super annoying in redraft leagues that don't have fab, and it's just like whoever's at top of the waiver order. Like you just got Puka Nacua, you just instantly made your team so much better. That's frustrating.
Yep.
But yeah, okay, that's all I had to say about that.
All right, I think that's all I got. If you made it this far, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for watching. Really appreciate it. Hit that like and subscribe button. Helps us out. We will catch you next Tuesday. Peace out. Have a good one. See ya.
Thanks, everyone.
See you guys.